Hello, Andrew Hebard here with the Ahi Flower Channel, Regenerative Omegas for a Regenerative Planet. And today I'm with Dr. Ella Baker from the University of Southampton. And Dr. Baker completed her PhD titled Comparing the Anti-Inflammatory Effects of Polyunsaturated Fatty Acids from Marine Sources to Sustainable Plant Sources. And you did that under the supervision of Professor Philip Calder in 2018. And your research to date really focuses on the metabolism, functionality, and underlying mechanisms of the action of plant-derived fatty acids. And I think it's fair to say that your overall interests generally are about researching the mode of action of novel plant-derived fatty acids and their effect on membrane structure and function. Would that be fair to say that?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today, Ella.
Thank you so much for having me.
So at the University of Southampton in my home country back in the UK, you're part of a team there, which is probably one of the most scientifically recognized and highly published university groups in the area of omega-3 fatty acid metabolism. My first question really is, what put Ahi Flower on your radar to sort of incorporate that into your research?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I think it really stems from my PhD. So as you described, so my PhD was really looking at plant sources of bioactive fatty acids and particularly omega-3s as alternatives to marine-derived sources. And I studied the effects on inflammation using endothelial cells. So I investigated the effects of ALA, SDA, and GLA on endothelial cell function, and kind of led me to this really deep interest in alternative omega-3 fatty acids, and particularly SDA, because I saw that SDA did have anti-inflammatory properties and it could be a sustainable plant source with bioactive activity. So this kind of led me to ahi flower oil, because we know that ahi flower oil has that higher amount of SDA in it. And this could be really a really potentially great source of sustainable terrestrial alternative fatty acid to marine derived sources. So yeah, it really piqued my interest into ahi flower oil. And I think that ahi flower oil could potentially change the way that people consume omega-3 fatty acids.
Wow. I mean, that's obviously, as you can imagine, music to our ears. And I think it's fair to say the work that you're doing and other lipid researchers in this area that are challenging the norms for, you know, what I think has been considered accepted science for probably 50 years about the different mode of action and efficacy between plant-based omegas and marine-based omegas is probably going to have pretty profound long-term effects on human health and planetary health. So really appreciate that you're doing that. And in your literature review, you looked at alternative sources of omega-3 for the reasons that you mentioned about particularly anti-inflammatory modes of action, etc. And you homed in on three different sources, I think, that you compared.
Yeah, so my literature review really was to talk about those current alternatives to marine-derived omega-3 fatty acids. And I wanted to discuss and explore what those are. So the kind of three sources that I chose to discuss were algal oils, and because we know these are rich in DHA and they've been used in infant formula industry for many years. Also, I talked about oils from genetically modified seed crops, which contain EPA and DHA. But as we know, there are issues around kind of GM and whether people want to consume those types of oils. And then I also talked about ahi flower oil and other sources of stearidonic acid, because I think they obviously hold a real potential as a sustainable alternative to the marine derived sources. We know that long chain omega-3 fatty acids have important roles in public and patient health, and they're highly relevant to both public health, nutrition and clinical nutrition. And we know that EPA and DHA decrease the risk of common non-communicable diseases and have a role in management of some diseases and in artificial nutrition support for various patient groups. But ultimately, marine sources are the primary source of EPA and DHA, and these fish stocks are rapidly declining. I think there's a stat to say that over 90% of fish stocks globally are have an overfished status. So we really need to think about these alternatives now.
Yeah, it's, you know, you articulate it so well, far better than I can, but, you know, omega-3s are essential nutrients, as are omega-6s. You know, they're essential nutrients. Every cell in our body contains them. They regulate or control so many essential metabolic functions. And I think it's fair to say that the prevalence of them in our diets is actually going down. And as we understand the importance of them and the science is supporting us to have higher intakes of omega-3, the background diet is actually going down. And my background is largely in agriculture and specialty crop production and plant breeding of specialty crops. And it's interesting, over the 30 to 40 years that I've been involved in this area, I've actually seen an active reduction in omega-3 in plant species because the industry has tried to breed out alpha-linolenic acid as a fatty acid that is prone to oxidation. It has sensory challenges, it has shelf life challenges. So our background diet from a plant sense has gone down in omega-3s. And of course, our dietary habits are changing as well to foods that don't necessarily lend themselves to sort of omega-3s. So we've become increasingly reliant, and I'm careful how I say the word reliant, but we've become, or supplementation has become increasingly important to humans to source their omega-3s. And as you say, about 95%, I believe, of supplements, omega-3 supplements, come from marine oils. And 90% of those sources are suffering sort of, you know, sustainability challenges. So it's kind of a competing landscape there. And I think the point you make about having to find sustainable sources is very true at this moment in time, let alone when we look to the future with growing population, growing demands. And not only that, I think you're probably aware that as product developers look to diversify, differentiate their omega-3 sources, they're now concentrating omega-3s up. So you have concentrates of EPA and DHA, particularly in pharmaceutical applications, which uses a disproportionately high level of omega-3 raw material to make the same sort of end product, if you like. So whichever way we look at it, there are increasing pressures on the supply of omega-3s and where they're going to come from. So did something jump out at you at those three different sources, GMO versus algal versus ahi flour? What was your takeaway from that?
I think my main takeaway would be that there is a real potential for stearinonic acid or oils that are rich in SDA, particularly because we know that both the omega-3 and the omega-6 pathways utilize the same enzymes. So when you're giving someone alpha-linolenic acid or the starting fatty acid in the omega-3 pathway, we're not always seeing them it being metabolized to EPA and DHA. And that might be because where the two pathways use that same enzyme at the start of the fatty acid synthesis, and people are consuming more omega-6, their delta-6 desaturase is being more preferentially used in the omega-6 pathway. So when they're consuming ALA, they're not seeing much EPA and DHA. So if you're able to give someone stereodontic acid as a starting point and omit that initial step in the pathway, you can see higher levels of EPA and perhaps a greater turnover of DHA as well. And I think that that sings to me as a real potential for us to consume a fatty acid and then metabolize our own EPA and DHA from that fatty acid.
So I'm really glad you mentioned that, because this, when we set out all these years ago in the UK, gosh, 30 years ago, to find something that was, you know, metabolically, I want to say superior, and I think I can say that in terms of omega-3 conversion, superior to flaxseed or linseed oil, as we call it in the UK, we really homed in on this notion that it was all about stereodontic acid and skipping that first rate limiting step. And I think since then, we've learned so much more that you know, skipping that first step is a really important strategy in terms of boosting the conversion of plant-derived omega-3s, as you say, through to EPA and DHA. But obviously, there's a plethora of other benefits there, and it's I'm in danger, or I think we're in danger of sort of turning people off when we talk about too much science, particularly metabolic pathways and enzymes and that sort of thing. And I always visualize it now, if I go back to the UK and you've got two competing teams like Man United and Man City, and their fans are trying to get into the stadium, there's only one turnstile. And so if that turnstile is like this rate limiting step, the amount that you get the other side, the turnstile, is going to be completely dependent upon the ratio of the fans in the first place. So if you can kind of leapfrog that step, and as you say, going back to, as I suppose is my comment earlier, going back to how our background diets have changed, we've actually got lower omega-3 plant-derived ALA in our diets. We've got more linoleic acid, omega-6, in our diet. So I think what you're saying is that ratio is determining the post-delta-6 desaturase ratio. So if you can, say, supplement with or fortify with stereodontic acid, you're getting a higher conversion through to EPA and DHA.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You mentioned one of my favorite fatty acids, GLA as well, which we know is not a omega-3, it's an omega-6, but it's, am I right in saying that it's the only omega-6 fatty acid that has sort of demonstrated anti-inflammatory properties?
So it does demonstrate some anti-inflammatory properties, yeah. And I think that's particularly through its conversion to DGLA. And I've demonstrated, I have actually looked at the effects of DGLA on cells and knocking down the enzyme that elongates GLA to DGLA, and showing that when you supplement or treat with GLA, if you knock down that enzyme and can't create DGLA, then GLA itself doesn't have as potent anti-inflammatory effects. So I think, yes, you're right, it has some anti-inflammatory effects, and it's probably through its conversion.
And I guess that's so true of a lot of these fatty acids, that in their own right, they have a mode of action, but it's often their metabolism to their either further desaturated or elongated downstream pathways that actually creates these anti-inflammatory benefits, like pro-resolving lipid mediators and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And which is a great segue into my next question here, which you've really, your article that you published discusses ahi flower's differential effects and metabolic fate compared to EPA and DHA sources. What certain things sort of really stood out to you about, or what evidence did you accumulate about ahi flower oil's differential effects, like the anti-inflammatory cytokine production, glucose metabolism, immune cell signaling, and lipid mediators, for example?
Yeah, so I think in general, ahi flower oil does have similar effects to those of fish oil. And I think some of the most interesting effects of bahi flower oil are the increases in production of IL-10, which we know is anti-inflammatory, and the insulin sensitizing effects. And these could be really important, I think, in a human setting. And there was one particular article by Lacanetti that described unique anti-inflammatory, insulin sensitizing and immunity enhancing properties of a lipid emulsion that contained ahi flower oil. And they used this in certain patient groups. And what they did was they compared this emulsion containing ahi flower oil to soybean oil and fish oil emulsions in mice. And they saw that the ahi flower oil containing emulsion had a greater effect than the fish oil containing emulsion. They showed that liver and muscle interleukin 10 and the ratio of IL-10 to IL-6 were higher in the ahi flower oil than with the soybean or the fish oil. And I think this is really important because IL-10 has anti-inflammatory properties. It helps prevent damage to the host and maintains normal tissue homeostasis. And it could really like be a driver for this particular oil in a human setting. I also think they also described that ahi flower oil and the fish oil both resulted in greater hepatic insulin receptor abundance and similar HOMA-IR, which is obviously a marker of insulin resistance. So I think put together, this really demonstrates that ahi flower oil has a potential to be that sustainable alternative to fish oils. And alongside that, as which is also really interesting, is the mediators, of course. So there's a great potential for the effects of the mediators that are produced from the fatty acids that are in ahi flower oil, ALA, SDA, and GLA. And Lacanetti also described this. So what they did was they took an ahi flower oil emulsion, which resulted in higher levels of these particular mediators from ALA. And when they administered the mediators that they found alongside a soybean oil emulsion, that actually mimicked the effects of the ahi flower oil emulsion itself. And that kind of really shows that these mediators are of key importance when we are consuming these fatty acids, and these mediators have a real effect and anti-inflammatory properties and are part of the bioactivity of these fatty acids.
So, and I believe that research was done in, as you say, it was done in an emulsion, and that was delivered intravenously, looking at comparing it to how some patients receive their nutrition through total parenteral nutrition, where they're relying exclusively on intravenous nutrition to deliver their sort of their energy, their lipid sources, their protein, etc. So it was a very good way of comparing, a true sort of head-to-head comparison in that model. Looking broadly at there's a growing body of science around the sort of pharmacological applications and biochemical pathways of stearidonic acid and ahi flower. Looking broadly at just general nutrition, from your research, do you think ahi flower, or what role do you think ahi flower has to play in overall improvement in the omega status, omega nutrition, of consumers that aren't looking to take it or aren't going to take it either as a, maybe as a dietary supplement or as a pharmaceutical intervention, but just through all-round health and nutrition? Because I think that's a key area that the University of Southampton is looking at, is generally the omega status of consumers and how do we improve our access to omega nutrition, because our background diets are becoming, it's harder to find them in regular food products.
Yeah, I think if we can provide the evidence to show that ahi flower oil or its component fatty acids are mimicking the mechanisms of actions of fish oil or fatty acids such as EPA and DHA, then this could be a key step in developing foodstuffs containing ahi flower oil. And I think this could really kind of benefit those who are on or follow a plant-based diet or are environmentally conscious. And that could be a way of really getting this type of oil into people's diets through fortified food stuffs, essentially.
Yeah. And you know, again, you're in the UK. I'm from the UK. I'm very familiar with and very passionate about UK agriculture and particularly UK land stewardship. When I first went to college all those decades ago, I think there was just under 60 million people in the UK. And I think now we're probably close to 75 or 80 million people in the UK. Land, accessibility to land is becoming harder and harder. It's a finite resource. Productivity from agriculture is something we have to be very mindful of, and how we farm the land, in the best way possible for the environment, for future generations, for the quality of food, etc. So, as you know, we've adopted regenerative agricultural practices for all of our ahi flower production in the UK. I'm also a very keen outdoorsman and a very keen fisherman. And again, when I first went to college, you could chuck a line into the North Sea and catch cod. And we had one of the most abundant herring fisheries there and mackerel fisheries. And of course, we know that that's not the case now. So, you know, we're through our regenerative agricultural practices, we're also trying to regenerate the oceans by producing something terrestrially that is taking some of the pressure off the marine sources. And I don't think for a minute that, and I don't think it's realistic or it's probably appropriate that a plant-based source completely eliminates fish as a source of omega-3s. I think they're they're compatible. Collectively, plant-based, algal-based, and marine-based have to sort of collaborate to be a solution for solving this problem. So, you know, as you think about that, what direction is your research pulling you in? Your personal interest? I sense that you're very interested in the environment. You're very interested in sustainability and, of course, human health and development. Where's the next step for Dr. Baker, and where's that taking you? Where's your sort of heart and your brain taking you?
Yeah, so I'm interested in all those things, and I'm a biochemist at heart. So my real passion is the mechanisms of action of these particular fatty acids. So my research really next is to understand how the fatty acids in ahi flower oil modulate inflammatory signaling, and how they change membrane dynamics, and how this can have an effect on cell membrane signaling and then regulating inflammation and then regulating mitochondrial function. So I really want to know whether these particular fatty acids that are found in ahi flower oil, the ALA, the SDA, and the GLA, can have similar effects to EPA and DHA. And I think if we can show that they do, then this could have a real impact on what happens next with ahi flower oil, and hopefully will be a key step in human research, so clinical trials containing ahi flower oil and foodstuffs containing ahi flower oil.
It's so good. I mean, I'm so excited, not just for you and for the research that you're doing, but also for the impact that I think that's going to have on planetary health, human health. Obviously, I'm very pro ahi flower as well, but thinking bigger picture here beyond just ahi flower. I think it's great, Ella, the work that you're doing, and I wish you every success in the future. We're hugely appreciative of the work that you're doing and shining a light on an area that I say is really groundbreaking science in helping us rethink about how we have to make mindful decisions about sustainable ingredients, sustainable nutrients, and not just the sustainability of them, but also how we produce them and the legacy that leaves behind And we're very pro regenerative agriculture. I know the UK is moving strongly towards that area as well. So thank you for that. And look forward to sort of work collaborating with you in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me today.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.